My name is Alessandro Gandini, and I'm a sociologist. I work at the Department of Digital Humanities at King's, and I'm researching the role of digital technologies and social media in society, in a variety of societal contexts.
My name is Maria Bujanowska-Jones, and I'm an artist based at Somerset House Studios. So I have a research-based artistic practice researching different aspects of techno-capitalism, and lately have revolved around gamification. So we were brought together through the scheme, collaborative funded scheme of King's Cultural Institute and Somerset House Studios, which pairs up academic and artistic leads from both institutions, aiding them to develop collaborative work and then present them, hoping to develop new ways of thinking in both parties.
I've always been a fan of collaborations between academics and artists, and I think that artists are often way more advanced in their critical thinking than academics can be, which, you know, academics are slow, so inevitably takes a little bit of time to process and do empirical work and then come up to some thinking. Artists do a lot more quicker than that, so I sort of immediately felt that Maria was that Maria and I were on the same page with some of this critical thinking around some of the topics that we both are interested in, as, for instance, the way in which digital technologies impact social relations. And there, that's how we started. The idea was to try and use a shared setting in which participants in our research could feel free to exchange views and thoughts and some of their personal and more intimate details, and therefore focus groups represented the sort of obvious choice, because it gives the chance to people to sit together in a room and sort of avoid the one-on-one sort of awkward feeling that sometimes an interview might get. So we've developed two focus groups, both of them attempting at gender parity and using making use of participants from a number of different backgrounds, both ethnically and racially, and looking at eventually the ways in which their use of dating apps revolved around the issue of trust and their development of intimacy, the building of intimacy. One of the things that we also looked at and we started from was our shared interest in the technologies of the self, so how technology builds the construction of oneself. And in the context of dating apps, this is taken to the extreme in a way, because you're playing with that particular practice in front of somebody you don't know.
This notion of self-representation led to the decision of employing role play or some sort of emergence of LARP, live action role play and real gameplay to realize this project, because as a starting point was I had choreography. Definitely wanted to explore different sensorialities other than the visual, as Alessandro mentioned. We were looking at the self-representational profiling models of dating apps, which are flattened to visual, two-dimensional aesthetic. And what I was more curious about was exploring how that translates, how that differs in physical space, especially in development of intimacy and all this courting process that involves much more sensorial input beyond the visual, such as olfactory, tactile haptics, also, you know, body posture, tone of voice. There's much more there than the gamified versions that we see.
Within the context of the focus groups, we brought in also the other interest that brought us together, which is blockchain technology. One of the things that have been more talked about over the past year and a half or two is the ways in which blockchain technology, which derives from Bitcoin but is not a financial technology, can be used or eventually will end up being used in a number of societal contexts to intermediate notions of trust and data ownership. So one of the things that we brought into the focus group was a question around blockchain use and the different conceptions of trust that a sort of newly decentralized, technologically mediated infrastructure could offer. So we gathered views from dating app users about this particular aspect as well.
We also asked them about how would they see this new layer, this new possibility of utilizing technologies which have been predominantly used or are best known for the use of cryptocurrencies as an authentication of profile models, because lots of the stakeholders at the research were talking about all the problematics and jargon such as catfishing, ghosting, and everything that is associated with this with how interpersonal relationships develop and build or deteriorate or disappear, disintegrate sort of during the process of engaging with dating apps.
We're one of the questions that we brought in the focus groups and of course expanded around our work was to try and see what's next for these and what's the sort of impact they may bring. The diffusion of blockchain in societal context is one of the key issues of, I think, the present times in relation to the relationship between technology and social relations in particular. It is difficult to say the extent to which blockchain will become a sort of mass application in a number of contexts, but there's a clear advantages that it brings when it comes to decentralizing and offering new ways of dealing, especially with the ownership of data that some of the things that we now normally do in our everyday lives involves. But there are questions on where the new sort of structures of power and relationships among individuals and institutions are going to go, and how these will be constructed is inevitably something that will create new hierarchies, new differentiations, and new inequality potentially. So that's a context that is very much ongoing and difficult to sort of take a snapshot at. But I would expect this is not going to be the solution to all issues, but maybe a technology that will bring some solutions, but also new questions to us.
The diffusion of decentralized organizational models could offer like a myriad of solutions, for example, from political to corporate organization, and as we are exploring, even on interpersonal relationships, on forming intimate relationships. So the notion of trust through today's surveillance economies is transformed in a way that it's increasingly become intransparent, and with the overload of information, the consumers, the users, the data sharers, which is pretty much all of us, tend to be ambivalent or even passive towards how this data is used or abused or shared. I personally view that boredom has an aspect of it, but even more so the overwhelm of data flow and input on daily basis, and in this respect the addictive qualities of what new technologies offer. The addictive qualities of the various disguises of new technologies.
The question of trust in today's economies is probably the question that we need to ask ourselves in relation to not just the individual, but also on a sort of public scale. The example I usually make is the scandal around Cambridge Analytica and what happened with all those data that flooded from personal accounts on Facebook to become weapons, in a way, in a political domain, in the semi-obscurity for those who actually own those data, or, you know, in theory should own those data. So how do we make sure that we get into a context in which there is this public trust is a question that we haven't answered because of the fast development of datafication, which has taken place so rapidly that we don't have the legislative and even to some extent the cognitive conceptual skills to understand what is going on. So the question will be, I guess, mainly from a legislative perspective as well, to understand how to make sense of a context that in so little time has changed so significantly when it comes to how we deal with this overload of information and what different actors can do with information that we think is innocuous, but maybe it's not necessarily so.
Online exchanges have brought in new levels of complexity to how we interact, and specifically to intimacy, since the dilution of this, since deleting the boundaries between private public that social media has brought forward, there is no turning back. Now we can't rethink what was before, even for those of us who are not digital natives.
The ways in which we construct intimate relationships, in a way that is mediated or partially mediated by digital technologies, is inevitably different than what we were used to experience before. And I agree that there is no turning back other than thermonuclear war that cuts power and internet all across the world. But I don't think that's a scenario we need to sort of like particularly fantasize about. But the point is that the especially the younger generations are growing in a way that is accustomed to look to technological processes and apps and services to do things that in a way simplify this access to intimacy. And of course it brings some positive sides to it, and some negative sides. On the positive side, think about how you know, many teenagers, potentially a little bit more shy than others, could use technology to sort of break certain personal barriers and boundaries. And of course, on the other side, there are some people like the very famous quote from Sherry Turkle that we sort of end up in being alone together. I don't really believe that, but it's also clearly there's a number of sort of counter effects to that, and one of those that we've sort of discussed together, of course, is addictive behaviors. So it is of course a balance, but as we said, we don't think it's going to, you know, it's not productive to have a conversation about going back to some pre-digitized way of building intimacy because of the sort of blending of the two spheres nowadays, which is impossible to untangle.
I'm pretty curious in trends in technologies and even fetishizing new trends and developments, which can often turn out regressive. So what used to be the hype around augmented reality and virtual reality, and then in parallel was machine learning, and then disembodied embodied artificial intelligence as part within it, and now we have the blockchain, and we've had since a few years the blockchain bubble. I'm very curious what the future holds. Unsure what can I speculate with it, but still back to the problematic that it is available to very few. A very small percentage of society is familiarized with it, and that's already brings it to an elitist, even meritocratic aspect of it.
What the future of the blockchain bubble holds is probably a question that will be answered once another sort of trendy word comes to be popular and will replace blockchain as the new big thing. So probably the question would be how long until we have another trendy word that everybody talks about and everybody thinks it's going to be the solution to all problems. I don't know. Blockchain seems to be somehow staying longer than others, probably for lack of alternatives, probably for a number of reasons that that relate to the way the tech scene has sort of jumped onto blockchain in a very peculiar way, as a potential disruptor of a number of contexts. So it's difficult, but I think it's difficult to say in with certainty, but it's likely that at some point someone will bring a new thing up and people will forget blockchain existed.
How Alessandro's research personifies it through through a LARP, stage LARP, live action role play, involving gamers who are interacting via digital wallets, and the game mechanics, their tasks are intertwined to explore some of the notions that are crucial to this project. The game master, who with whom I will develop the game mechanics, is Omsk Social Club from Berlin, and they involve a couple of core players and wider game players, and they all have certain characters and tasks and interact with each other. It lasts a couple of hours, I would say around 6 hours at least.
There is a degree of technological determinism applied to this, so that it brings with a promise of reshaping the ways in which we do things that we've always been doing. And it comes with a lot of contradictions, of course, in doing that. The way in which this is being sort of like discussed most of the times is that there's a blockchain for everything. You know, we can sort of like put everything on a blockchain, which maybe it's a bit problematic to say. And of course, I guess for an academic perspective needs to be challenged. So looking onto the ground, in fact, for instance, in the small sort of scale example of work that we've done, gets you to understand that it's very specific, the group of people who actually might think that. But down on the ground, the issues that people face when it comes to using a certain app or technology are much simpler than technology like blockchain revolutionizing capitalism. Maybe they just want to go on a date.